Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have this on the line from South Carolina, from Raleigh, South Carolina, or North Carolina, I guess it is, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who, in my opinion, is the finest researcher we have going to the background of this move towards the New World Order, the New World Religion. Dr. Cuddy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's always a pleasure, and we were going to talk today about Skull and Bones, and then you called back and wanted to talk a little bit about Dick Clark's new book, Against All Enemies. So where should we start, with Dick Clark or with the Skull and Bones Society, to which both President Bush and presidential hopeful John Kerry belong?
Well, I thought the main would be the Skull and Bones and the Power Elite Exposed article that I had on News with Views, but since there's been this big controversy this past week with the testimony of Richard Clark and his book, I believe the title is Against All Enemies.
Right.
And his, I think, Tim Russert on Meet the Press Sunday spent the entire hour talking to him. Since that seems to be a hot topic, I thought maybe I could say a little bit about that.
All right. You know, it's really fascinating to see how they've mobilized the entire media, you know, to discredit Dick Clark. And we find, of course, everybody, you know, who is pro-Bush is coming out. They're attacking him because he gave some money to two Democratic candidates. And you know what that means. Well, I don't know what that means. Maybe he knew these people and he thought they were pretty good. They could only find two Democrats he'd ever given any money to, and he was registered as a Republican in the past. Maybe he felt that these people would do a good job. But, of course, they criticized him for that. They everything possible that they possibly can come up to demonize and vilify him. And this is what happens to anybody who works for government who tells the truth.
That's right, and we're finding out things all the time. I would think after a couple of years or 2.5 years of time since September 11th, the terrorist attacks took place, that they'd pretty much have everything that they were going to find out. They would have found out, but we even see today there was an item that indicated an FBI informant to reveal to the basics of the 9/11 plot in April of 2001. And so...
No, I'm sorry, what was that? I missed that.
Well, there's this... A former FBI employee is an individual who recently briefed the 9/11 commission.
Oh, was this Sarah Edmondson? She was the interpreter, the translator?
Well, no, I don't think so.
It's, all right, that must be another one then.
Yeah. What happened was there was, they call them assets. It was a veteran Iranian intelligence officer, and he had been stationed in Afghanistan under the Shah in days of old. And he didn't know the specifics. He didn't know the planes would be used as missiles. But back in April of 2001, he was passing on information to a couple of FBI agents that there was an attack that was going to occur, and he had had contacts himself in the Afghan, the inner circles of Al-Qaeda. And so he was passing this along, and one of the FBI agents filed a report and gave it to the supervisor, and maybe after the music we continue.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and he's talking about new information that's come out this week about an FBI report based upon information from somebody in Iran who had said that they knew there was going to be an attack coming on America. Do you want to develop that idea, Dr. Cuddy, a little bit more? Was this before the 9/11 Commission?
There was a former FBI employee recently briefed the 9/11 Commission about this tip. Now, you would think, you know, 2.5 years, we would have, her or somebody would have found out something prior to this, but apparently this is new information. Basically, in April of 2001, there was a longtime FBI source. He told two counterterrorism agents from the Washington field office of the FBI that Al-Qaeda was planning to carry out terrorist attacks in major U.S. cities. Now, he said it included New York. They would use planes, and there would be suicide operatives. Other cities that were named were Chicago, Los Angeles, and the reports were filed, and apparently they went to somebody named Freelds, F-R-I-E-L-D-S, Thomas Freelds, who has since retired, and this individual has been hard to find. Attempts to reach him have been unsuccessful, and if you call the Washington field office, they don't return the calls, but apparently these reports were filed with him, and we're not sure where they went after that, whether they went up the ladder or not, but the point being that there was this Iranian, he had been a veteran Iranian intelligence officer, and he'd been stationed in Afghanistan under the Shah of Iran, and when the Shah was in power, and so he had developed contacts within Al-Qaeda, and so he had gotten the word, and he was passing it on to these two FBI counter-terrorism agents, and they, did the proper thing, and he came along later and was asking them, did you pass the information on? Have you done anything with the information? And so on, is what he's been telling the 9/11 Commission.
Well, it's very interesting because much of at least part of that story is covered in Eleanor Hill's testimony on the 18th of September 2002, and we are covering that in our latest newsletter. It's amazing that they're just getting around to this, but they totally suppressed Eleanor Hill's testimony. She was the staff director for the Joint Select Committee, and those people who take my newsletter will get that reference to the April report that they knew that they were going to use airplanes, and they were going to have attacks on buildings like the World Trade Center. That was the exact testimony that was given almost a year and a half ago. Gee, I wonder why nobody's ever heard that. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Dr. Cuddy. Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Anything else? That's really fascinating. It's getting out. Of course, anybody who'd read Eleanor Hill's testimony would have known that.
Right.
But then, of course, when you control the media, you can control the testimony, and nobody, to my knowledge, I've never heard them comment on the fact that Eleanor Hill said that September 18th, 2002, in her testimony.
Right. And so that's why can look at what Richard Clark has said in his book, not only his book Against All Enemies, but he has given a lot of testimony, private testimony, to the 9/11 Commission in addition to what we were able to see publicly. And what I think is interesting is sometimes he'll say something and people will just sort of, listen to it and pass right on by. But what I thought was fairly interesting is you and I have discussed ever since, I guess, 9/11, why certain things weren't done, including one of the things that I had mentioned was a helicopter on standby alert. Well, come to find out, when Tim Russert on Meet the Press this past Sunday asked Richard Clark to respond to the fact that Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice were saying nobody could have imagined this would have happened, Clark immediately responded and said, well, we did imagine it. And he quickly pointed out the 1996 Atlanta Olympics. He and some counterterrorism members of his team went down to Atlanta, and they considered, he said, the possibility that terrorists could use hijacked planes to crash into the Olympic Stadium. And so Clark said, quote, We quickly cobbled together a plan for that using helicopters, no-fly zones, snipers, air defense radars. We did that again for five or six events over the next 5 years, that'd be from 1996 to 2001, and I tried to get the authority and I tried to get the money to make it permanent capability to protect the Congress and the White House, but I was not able to do that, end quote. Now, that's fairly interesting in the sense that they had a plan in place. Apparently, they had used it five or six times. It did involve helicopters, and then when Condoleezza Rice comes in as National Security Advisor under President Bush, they try to get this as a permanent authority to protect the White House and Congress, but surely in that vicinity it would have been able to protect the Pentagon as well. And then obviously if you had, let's say, an attack and a helicopter like the Apache, which has not only 30-millimeter chain guns, but it has rockets and missiles as well, that type of helicopter on standby alert would have easily been able to prevent the completion of the terrorist attacks in New York City as well, and you would have had one there simply because when they said, well, we knew something big and soon was going to happen, they would have immediately, one would think they'd immediately say, well, since the terrorists had already tried to blow up the World Trade Center in 1993, this is, you know, a possible target. And Condoleezza Rice, in an attempt to quash the testimony last Wednesday of what Richard Clark was saying, summoned reporters to her West Wing office. And among the interesting things she said is, oh, yeah, I ordered them to look at the possibility of an attack within the U.S. Yeah, we thought it might be overseas. Yeah, that's where it looked. But we were up on it. You know, we weren't negligent. We knew there was the possibility of an attack here. Okay, so if they're admitting they knew the possibility of an attack here, if Clark already had this plan that had been put in place involving helicopters, if he tried to get it permanently to protect the Washington, D.C. area, which would have covered the Pentagon, if they would have automatically applied it also to New York, since they'd already tried to hit the World Trade Center in 93, it seems from what's transpired with his testimony, what she told reporters, and what he is telling Tim Russert, and I guess in closed session to the 9/11 Commission, that this thing really would have been fairly easy to prevent, including Washington, because as you had pointed out before, in the bunker, Dick Cheney is telling Norman Mineta, well, here comes an aide in, and the aide tells Cheney, well, the plane's 50 miles out, and 30 miles out, and 10 miles out. So they were tracking the thing. It's not like it was a surprise to them. And not only did they not use an easily available forget the F-16, you know, coming from Otis Airfield, just using a helicopter, well, why didn't Cheney from his bunker or somebody call the Pentagon and say, well, we're in our bunker, maybe you guys would like to get in your bunker or evacuate the building too. But instead, all of the people in the Pentagon just get to have this plane slammed into them with apparently no defense at all.
And that's what's so interesting is they evacuated the White House. They just didn't evacuate the Pentagon. You have to ask yourself why. But of course, that's in my coming letter. But there's a woman named, I believe her name is Sarah Edmonds, and she actually gave a press conference back in Washington, D.C. today, this last week, and there were all sorts of reporters and cameras there, and not one word of it got in the press. She was a translator for the FBI, and she said that she had all sorts of information about the information they had about the attack beforehand, but she's prevented by government from, and she's been threatened with imprisonment if she ever tells what she knows, and because they say you're violating the War Secrets Act and all this sort of thing. She spent 3 hours with the interrogated by the commission in private, and then they wouldn't call her to testify. And the thing is that they're not calling anybody to testify who's going to tell the truth. Now, this thing is a cover-up. In fact, it was very interesting when Richard Clark came out and was very critical of the administration for attacking Iraq because the enemy was Al-Qaeda. And he said, you know, we're at war with terrorism. Why didn't we finish the war with terrorism? Why did we attack Iraq? And of course, if you use that analogy, it's sort of like after the Japanese attacking Pearl Harbor in 1941, President Roosevelt attacking Mexico. Well, John Lehman, who is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, former Secretary of the Navy, an establishment individual, is put on the commission to track anybody who tries to tell the truth. Immediately attacked Clark and saying, well, if that's the case, why didn't you say that in closed session? You see, we're not supposed to know what goes on in closed session, but John Layman dropped the ball and said, why didn't you say that in the closed session? And Richard Clark said, because nobody asked me.
I see.
So, you see, you have to understand, if you're out there in the audience, you're not supposed to know what goes on in the closed session, and the people are going to tell the truth. They're not going to invite them. Well, they invited Richard Clark, and of course, he was 15 hours with them in closed sessions. They wanted to know everything he was going to say so that they could prevent anything really important from being brought out, because the last thing they want is for the American people to know the truth. What is the truth? We needed an incident. If you read the book Rumsfeld's War we've done a number of interviews on that, but in the beginning of that book, the author, Roland Scarborough, tells about a high government official who said to him off the record, now I would never say this publicly, but if it hadn't been for the September 11th attack, we never could have gotten the American people to go along with a war against Afghanistan. Donald Rumsfeld said essentially the same thing in his testimony. The American people really didn't want to go to war before September 11th. We had to have an incident. And when next month I'm going to tell you the true story of what happened that morning, what happened in the bunker when Dick Cheney was monitoring the plane coming in. And according to Norman Mineta, when the plane was 50 miles out, the aide came in and said, the plane's 50 miles out. The aide comes in and says, the plane is 30 miles out. And then the aide comes in and says, the plane is 10 miles out. Do the orders still stand? And according to Mineta, Dick Cheney whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary about the orders? Well, what were the orders? Nobody wants to ask that question. In fact, nobody ever heard about that testimony. Anybody who wants copies will be glad to send it to you. It is included in both our February and March newsletters. And next month, we'll tell you the rest of the story.
Well, that's extremely important. And add to that, since you mentioned Clark in Iraq, when he was asked, about why the war against Iraq was a distraction from the war on terror, which the administration seems to be trying to lump together. He said there were several points, but one in particular. He said, at this particular point, when it was very important to have cooperation among various nations to root out terrorism that had caused the 9/11 led by Osama bin Laden, he says, a lot of Muslims around the world were saying, now, wait a minute, maybe we shouldn't be supporting these radical Wahhabis. And so we were starting to get some sympathy and starting to get some cooperation so that possibly we could have met with resistance any future terrorist attack or at least gathered intelligence. However, he said, then when we turned around and immediately said, all right, now we're dropping Osama as the chief villain, and immediately we picked up Saddam. Now it's Saddam. Saddam's the big threat. And we attacked Iraq. He said that undid all of the progress that we had made and really created, I think, as the head of Egypt, Hosni Mubarak, said, if you go into Iraq, what you're going to do is actually create a 100 or more Osama bin Ladens. And so the original sympathy after 9/11 in the fight against terrorism that we had garnered among Muslims worldwide has now been thrown away, as Clark said.
And of course, Clark said that Osama bin Laden had been telling the Arabs the real purpose behind everything going on today is the United States wants to attack an Arab country to get their oil. This is what it's really all about. And it's not about 9/11. It's all about they want to attack an Arab country and get their oil. And he said, what we've done is we've proved to the Muslims throughout the world that Osama bin Laden was right. Why would we do something that stupid unintentionally when we knew that Iraq was not involved in the terrorist attack? And as Clark said so readily, he said, we had sent a message to Osama bin to Saddam in 1993 after they tried to kill George Herbert Walker Bush. We wiped out with cruise missiles their intelligence headquarters and let them know if they did anything after that, why we would wipe out their entire government. He said after that they behaved, they did absolutely nothing, they weren't involved in terrorism. That's why we went to war with them. Nothing makes sense, ladies and gentlemen. Well, we'll tell you more in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. 4,000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I just want to mention that we carry something called Miracle 2 soap products. I never thought I'd be selling soap products, but they really are pretty good. We've used them now for a couple of years. And there's a soap, a moisturizing soap, a lotion, a gel, and a neutralizer. I use the moisturizing soap because I got a soap allergy and a soap rash, and I've used that, and the rash is gone. A lot of people will tell us that the various products, the gel or the lotion, really do help with the rashes, and people say that it helps with the acne. My wife uses the gel on just about everything imaginable that's sore. We can't tell you it's going to help you. All we can do is say, get the products, try them, see if they'll help you. And, of course, a lot of people take the neutralizer for their upper or lower gastrointestinal tract, getting away from having to take the expensive pills for GI upset. Anyway, you can learn more about Miracle 2 soap products if you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the Miracle 2 soap. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our special guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we've been talking about Richard Clark's book, Against All Enemies, his testimony that has been given before the 9/11 Commission, and certainly I was fascinated by his what he said on 60 Minutes. It was a week ago Sunday, where they gave him a full half hour. Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, this is an effort to get John Kerry elected. Now, I think it's an effort to bring the truth out about what really happened on that morning, because this changed America forever. America will never be the same as it was on September 11th. And if there's nothing to conceal, why is the Bush administration refusing to reveal what happened at the CIA briefing on the 6th of August of 2001, when we know the president was told that the terrorists were planning to use planes, to hijack planes and to utilize those planes? That's all we know. The rest of the briefing has been suppressed. One person from the 9/11 Commission has been allowed to see it, and her remarks are, well, if you knew it was in that briefing, it would make the hair stand up on the back of your head. That's all we know. Of course, I don't. What are your thoughts on the cover-up? Because obviously the administration is doing everything they can to delay the hearings. They're sending all sorts of nonsensical information. They're keeping people from testifying who have stories to tell. And this current 9/11 commission is a cover-up. The president put all of these people into key positions. He appointed one of the co-chairmen. He has authority over a number of the people on the commission. And the whole idea is to keep the American people from knowing the truth. You have to have the majority of the people on that commission have to agree to have anybody testify, and anybody they don't want to testify is not going to be allowed to testify, to tell the American people the truth. And if there's nothing to conceal, why is the administration so intent upon concealing it?
As you said, they pick the commission members. Now they say, well, look how balanced it is, and the even number of Democrats and Republicans. But if you talk to the victims, the family members of the victims, they would say, this isn't what we wanted. We wanted academics and journalists and people who would actually dig and try to get to the truth rather than be so concerned about being polite to their friends, many of whom are testifying before them. There's this sort of friendly relationship. They know each other personally. Also, one has to wonder why Condoleezza Rice can summon reporters over to the West Wing on Wednesday after Richie Clark's testimony and pop up with press briefings all over the place, but then when it comes to publicly testifying under oath, we can't do that, separation of powers and so forth, the commission members, Republican and Democrat, have said, well, you know, that's nonsense. You know, we're not an agent or arm of Congress, so it really doesn't even get into separation of powers. And even Admiral Lehman, who you mentioned, I mean, even he said, because he had written a couple of books on executive privilege, he said this is nonsense that the White House is keeping her from testifying under oath. And then, as you said about the August 6th briefing, Bob Woodward and another reporter for the Washington Post already had inside sources. They already found out that in the briefing there was mention of a possibility of a hijacking and a possibility of an attack within the U.S. So if you know the basics, what exactly is it in there specifically that they don't want anybody to know? And that they're not releasing it. Now, in terms of this is some sort of mechanism to elect John Kerry, as Richard Clark said, he wanted the book to come out in Christmas. He had prepared it and had it finished back in around October and gave it to the White House because they have to approve whatever comes out to be sure there's nothing classified. And that's in terms of Senator Frist saying, oh, he's using terribly classified material. He says, well, that's the reason the White House got the book first, so they could delete anything that was very classified. And he said they're the ones who have delayed it until around February when it was finally completed and he'd get it to the publisher. So if there's any reason for a delay, it's for that reason. But in terms of Kerry, pardon, if we could spend a little time on the article I did, The Power Elite Exposed, because part of that is the Skull and Bones influence. And one reason I think in the alternation of power that William Whitney, a Skull and Bones member, big money man of the late 1800s, had developed a plan whereby they would contribute money heavily to both major political parties, and then they would alternate power so that the stupid public thought it had a choice when it really didn't. And so if you apply that recently, you'd have George Herbert Walker Bush, president for one term, followed by Bill Clinton, who was president for two terms, a Rhodes Scholar, and then followed by George W. Bush. Now, you need that second term. The only way to assure a Skull and Bones member would have a second term is to have John Kerry, another Skull and Bones member, challenge George W. Bush, that guarantees Skull and Bones will have a second term.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Dr. Dennis Cuddy.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam and Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 on the route down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts, entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that'll give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let me mention several of the other things that we carry. One of them is something called Phonopoly, and it's a game. It's a board game played like Monopoly, but it's aimed at teaching you how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. This is how reading should be taught. Do you realize that back in the year 1800, here in the United States, we had a 95% literacy rating? And today we have over 100 million Americans who are either partially or totally illiterate, can't read, and this is because they've intentionally taught us using the wrong approach. So this is why many people have a great deal of difficulty spelling. They've been crippled as far as their lives are concerned because they've been deliberately deprived of learning how to read phonetically. Phonopoly is a board game played like Monopoly. It's $139.95. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. The product is called Phonopoly. And then we want, of course, many of you out there to seriously consider setting up an institute of the Constitution in your home, in your church, in your neighborhood, to teach the American people the message that everyone used to understand. Everybody knew about our Constitution, about our Declaration of Independence. They knew that according to our Declaration of Independence, our rights came from God, different than any other nation. For we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that governments are instituted among men to preserve those rights. That's what it says in the Declaration of Independence. The Institute of the Constitution will teach you about our godly heritage. Call the number, it's 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. Get a Institute on the Constitution kit. Learn yourself and help us to teach others about our godly heritage. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And let me just mention, we carry Dr. Cuddy's books. If you haven't read them, you should. His book, Secret Records Revealed, will give you so much information. They give you an understanding of the background of the people who control both political parties. His book, Now is the Dawning, his book, 9/11 Prior Knowledge, going into what really happened that morning. I mean, the children in New York City were bringing cameras to school on the morning of September 11th because they knew an attack was coming, but Condoleezza Rice had no idea. I mean, this was common knowledge on the streets of New York, but the FBI had no idea the attack was coming. Well, I would tell you that I have a personal friend, Dr. Garth Nicholson, who is, and I believe in his story, that he was told by a high official in government who could not come forward publicly, and Garth Nicholson was told that there would be an attack on the Pentagon on the 11th of September. Have you read that? Has Dr. Nicholson been asked to come and testify before the 9/11 Commission? It's going to be a cold day in hell before he is invited to appear. And, of course, his message is brought out to the American people, because think of the implication. If they knew there was going to be an attack, and they knew the date of the attack, How do you explain the murder of all these people? Aren't the people who allowed it to happen as complicit as the people who carried out the crime? I mean, if they knew the attack was coming, why weren't there any planes in the air? Why weren't there any helicopters? Why weren't the missiles on the Pentagon mobilized for that morning? Because, of course, there have been missiles on the Pentagon for many years. But nobody ever talks about that. I wonder why. Well, let's get back to our special guest this evening, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. But if you'd like to get his book, Secrets, Records Revealed, Now is the Dawning, 9-1-1, Prior Knowledge, Cover-Up, The Road to Socialism, and we have his other books on NEA Power Grab and Timeline, NEA Educational Timeline. What's the exact title of that one, Dr. Cuddy?
It's a chronology of education with quotable quotes. It covers 200 years.
Chronology of education with quotable quotes. All of this information is so vitally important, well-researched, no better source of information. You need to have this in your library, and you need to help us get the truth out. So, Dr. Cuddy, let's get back then. You were talking about Skull and Bones Society. What is Skull and Bones? People say, well, that's just a college fraternity. There are lots of college fraternities that have all sorts of, you know, very childish sort of ceremonies. But is Skull and Bones much more than just a childish college fraternity?
Yes, and it's rather than childish oaths, they, and I'll get into this a little bit later, they get into some rather occultic activities, and their wedding ceremony and these very strange chants and black robes and hoods and so forth.
But, and this is actually witnessed by a woman. That story is described in the book The Secrets of the Tomb by Alexander Robbins.
Right. And what one needs to remember here is the sort of historical connection. It was begun in the early 1830s by a couple of individuals, and the main point about it was at that time what you had is the well-established Connecticut, and other families had been involved, some of them, in the opium trade. And so there was a lot of trafficking in drugs at the early stage, and a lot of them at this time went, whether they went to school here, sometimes they'd send their children overseas, and so they originally had gone over to Germany and became familiar with a German university corps, C-O-R-P-S, and came back and established, for various reasons, the Skull and Bones Society, formerly Russell Trust, as they would call it. And one of the early members would be Alonzo Taft, whose descendant would be William Howard Taft, who became president of the U.S. as well as Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. And the idea was to have this sort of elite, and that's why you would find swastikas, and this is prior to Hitler, you would find swastikas in the tomb, as they called it. That's the vault in which they meet. It still exists there in pretty much the same form.
That's the meeting. That's the meeting place where the Skull and Bones meets at Yale University.
Right. And they're meeting there, and they have, 30, 40 or so skulls, and there have been, rumors about having Geronimo's skull and so forth. But the idea is they would bond there with other members, 15 on tap each year. And what they would do is have a secret oath, and it would sort of bind them to each other to help each other throughout the rest of their lives. And the idea would be you would get key people in key positions, and there's a reason for that, and I'll mention that briefly, but I'll just give some examples. Richard Eli Danielson would become publisher of Atlantic Monthly. Another fellow, Russell Wheeler Davenport, became editor of Fortune. William F. Buckley, Jr., who most of you listeners probably know, became publisher of National Review. Henry Luce became head of founder of Time magazine, and so on. But it's not just the publishing arena that they wanted to get into. It's also very important to get into government, especially into the CIA. And so you would have the Bundy brothers, McGeorge Bundy and his brother William Bundy, occupied high levels there. William Bundy actually worked for the CIA, as did William F. Buckley, Jr., again, same fellow. His brother did, James Buckley, William Sloan Coffin, the sort of notorious Reverend Coffin who threw blood on some files of the draft service at the time of the Vietnam War. The noted author, Archibald MacLeish, was a Skull and Bones member who worked for the CIA. Other names, Richard Bissell, Truby Davison, another fellow, Amory Bradford Howe, who also was general manager of the New York Times from the mid-40s to 63. He was skull and bones and worked for the CIA and a number of others, including a Hugh Cunningham, who was also a Rhodes Scholar. Now, that's important because these people, Rhodes Scholars, like I said, you have George Herbert Walker Bush, skull and bones, succeeded by Bill Clinton, Rhodes Scholar for 8 years, and succeeded by George W. Bush, skull and bones. But you'll have key people who are both. So, for example, George Tenet, the CIA director, why could he stay from the Clinton years, a Democrat, to the Bush years, George W. Bush, a Republican? You'd think a high-level position like that, Bush would put his own person in there. But what happened there was David Boren, U.S. Senator from Oklahoma, now I think he's president of Oklahoma University, comes to Bill Clinton as a Rhodes Scholar, Boren and Clinton, Rhodes Scholars, and said, I'd like you to have George Tenet be head of the CIA. Actually, he was an assistant first, and then he became head. And so when George W. Bush comes in, then what happens is David Boren, also a Skull and Bones member, puts on that cap, as it were, and comes to fellow Bonesman George W. Bush and says, I want you to keep Tenet in that position. So here's a similar case. Now, why is that important? Because in this alternation of power, if you're going to alternate power, there has to be some sort of cooperative group, okay? In this case, you have Rhodes Scholars and Cecil Rhodes' plan, a secret society, the Society of the Elect, to, as Rhodes himself said, to take the government of the whole world. And what he wanted to do is very much like the Skull and Bones people did. He wanted to penetrate the areas of journalism, economics, politics and education, other areas too, but he wanted to penetrate mainly those for a what he would call a hidden conspiracy for about six decades, and then it would evolve into a network of like-minded globalists. And what you would find out is that at the heart of this, and you've talked about this in your newsletters and on your radio program before, whether it's in Skull and Bones at the deep part of it, or if it's Rhodes in the deep part of that, you have an occultic aspect to this, because what you have is, at the time, Rhodes' right-hand man was the W.T. Stead, who was he edited the Pall Mall Gazette, and he was a really close friend of Annie Besant, who used to wear this little swastika around her neck, so not just, you know, the Skull and Bones people. And Annie Besant was asked by Stead to write a review of Madame Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine. And she's, you know, one of the leading occultists, perhaps the leading, of the late 19th century, Madame Blavatsky, founder of the Theosophical Society. Now, a lot of people who may be listening are, you know, their eyes are sort of glazing over, and here we go with this 150-year-old session again. But what you got to remember is that this stuff comes up to the present. It's actually now, and I'll give a quick example of this. What you have is people who teach at American University. Now, I don't know if you're familiar, but I had a friend who went up there, and she called it Spook U, as she called it. What you have is American University would train your future CIA agents, while at Georgetown they were training Foreign Service officers. But anyway, at American University, a respected university, you have Corinne McLaughlin and a Gordon Davidson. Gordon Davidson had worked with Lucis Trust, which, as you know, is formerly Lucifer Publishing Company, and published the works of Alice Bailey. And at the same time they're teaching there, they are founding not only the Sirius, that's S-I-R-I-U-S, the dog store's, you know, name, Sirius Community, but they have what's called a Sirius Journal. They have full moon meditations, the Alice Bailey study circle. They got messages to humanity from the divas of the tree, you know, all this very occultic stuff. Well, they aren't just weirdos. They actually were participating under President Clinton, his Council on Sustainable Development. In fact, in 1994, Corinne actually coordinated the task force dealing with sustainable development for President Clinton. And they both are the authors of that book you've referred to many times, Spiritual Politics.
Well, that's Corinne McLaughlin and Gordon Davidson.
Right, which goes into, you know, FDR and Woodrow Wilson, or, you know, first ray or sixth ray or whatever, disciples. And goes into the whole background, bringing it right up to the present. So these, you know, these occultic aspects in Skull and Bones and in Rhodes Scholars and Cecil Rhodes' background, this is not just something 100 years ago. This flows right up to today, and they also have, she talks about current language like the importance of the Divine Mother Goddess and esotericism. I mean, she gives these seminars on this stuff for the Seven Ray Institute. And so this stuff is not just historical. There's a whole tracking pattern that comes right up onto today, and it involves the occult.
And, of course, the skull and bones certainly had its origin in the occult, because the occult was the major force in Europe in the 19th century, and that's beautifully covered in a book by James H. Billington, who is the Librarian of Congress, the book Fire in the Minds of Men. And he talks about, you know, most people think that the major revolutionary movement of the 18th and 19th century had to do with the Enlightenment. It really didn't. It had to do with the occult, and he traces this whole occult history. Although he doesn't mention the secret society in Bavaria, we know that, of course, Bavaria was full of secret societies. And here now we have Skull and Bones originating with a secret society in Bavaria, coming to the United States and literally taking over key positions, controlling our finance, controlling the CIA. And you mentioned one Skull and Bones member who was the head of the CIA. His name was George Herbert Walker Bush. He was the director of the CIA. He was also a member of the board of directors of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was a founding member of the Trilateral Commission. He was a member of the Bilderbergers. He was president of the United States and father of our current president, George W. Bush. And anybody who's ever studied the CIA knows of the deep involvement in the drug smuggling, and there's no way you could be the director of the CIA, especially at the time when he was, without being involved in the drug smuggling as well. In fact, Barry Seal, who we talked about in the last hour, who was deeply involved, he was the largest drug smuggler of all time, worked very closely with the president, a man who would later become president. That's all covered in the book, Barry and the Boys. You won't be able to find this at your local bookstore.
And George Herbert Walker Bush's father, Prescott Sheldon Bush, was somewhat facilitative in assisting Hitler's economic ventures during the Second World War. And Hitler, of course, in terms of these swastikas again, got his idea for the swastika and the occult origins of the Third Reich from Madame Blavatsky, who we just mentioned. And since you also mentioned Bavaria, of course, that's where the Illuminati originated from. And so there are all of these tie-ins that go back at least a couple of hundred years, and the occult is, as you said, often at the origin of this, and they sort of get into other areas because it's important, as not only Barry Goldwater said when he wrote his autobiography, With No Apologies was the title of it, that in this case he was talking about the Trilateralists. He said not only do they want economic, social, and political control, they want ecclesiastical control as well. So as they're tearing down, whether it's the Illuminati tearing down religion of its day, tearing down the authority of religious figures as well as monarchs, and so on, they want to replace it, they know, with a sort of different spirituality. Now, today, oftentimes, they'll call it the New Age or something like that. But they do understand that part of the human condition isn't just your survival economically and your involvement politically or in business and so forth, but there is a spirituality. So to totally control people, they have to control that as well, the spiritual nature of human life. And so that's why all of this is a matter of getting key people into key positions of influence, whether it's Skull and Bones or Rhodes Scholars or the Fabian Socialists, who are another outfit that I cover in this article on newswithviews.com titled The Power Elite Exposed. They network together, but sometimes they take a little different tracks from each other, but you'll find them when it's expedient cooperating with each other. Whether it's Colonel House and his inquiry group, whether it's an H.G. Wells and his breaking with the Fabians, not in terms of ideology, but saying, I think, you know, we should come out in the open. Instead of a hidden conspiracy, we'll have the open conspiracy blueprint for world revolution. And it is not just, you know, here's their attitude. They actually project into the future. I cover various points by H.G. Wells where he would say, in the future there'll be a Second World War. In the future there'll be a New World Order. And he actually titles a book by that name. And it comes to fruition down the road. And so it's not just one aspect. And it's not just the Fabian Socialists. People tend to think, you know, socialism is sort of leftist. Now, you got to remember, Hitler's group was also called National Socialism, not just the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, but National Socialism as well. And so part of the plan, part of the sort of alternation, isn't just, well, here's this leftist bent that they're issuing us along. Here's what the Fabian Socialists and their partners like John Dewey and Education are pushing us to the left. At the same time, the Nazis had a plan. And this is way before Hitler loses in 1945, to put people underground, and in two successive, two generations, they would be able to implement their plan. They would get people to go from one country and then to a second country, so it would be harder to track them. They'd get into chambers of commerce, into banking business, and I've given in my books that you carry a couple of the individuals who went underground and later pop up in prominent positions. And why did they need that? Why did they need the left bent and then the right bent? Remember, the alternation of power, a synthesis. Eastern communism, Western capitalism, synthesized into a world socialist government. A dialectic is constantly at work.
And, of course, the whole idea is not to redistribute the wealth of the wealthy, but to redistribute the wealth of the middle class. That's the basis of globalization. That's why they're shipping our jobs, our factories, our wealth overseas, to impoverish the middle class here. So we'll have a two-class system, the very wealthy and the very poor. Dr. Cuddy, thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye, and God bless you.
Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, The Rules of Engagement, 2.5 gripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, The Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, The Rules of Engagement is currently unavailable through regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Just want to mention that we carry the Big Berkey water filters. We carry the Berkey Life water filters. They both work the same way. You put the water in the top, and by gravity, the water goes through the filters, comes out the bottom. The Big Berkey is made of stainless steel, and the filters are ceramic, packed with activated charcoal. You can take out most of the herbicides and pesticides and all the bad things and bacteria. And so you've got potable water from streams or rivers. The Big Berkey is $239, you can see pictures of it on our website if you go there. This is available in every state in the Union except California and Iowa. That's the Big Berkey. So if you'd like to get a water filter that really will clean up your water and make it taste good, take the chlorine out and certainly turk out, really purify the water. Here in California, you can, and really any place in the country, of course, but here in California, where you can't get the Big Berkey, you can get the Berkey Light. And the Berkey Light made out of Lexan, so you can see the water level, and that's why we got one. The filters, there's only two of them. They're called Black Berkey. They work much more efficiently than the ceramic filters that are 150 years old, but they have to be replaced every 2 to 3 years, depending upon how much you use them. Now, with both the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light, if you have a fluoride in your water or arsenic and you want to get that out, you got to get a special filter. Those have to be replaced every 6 months. But if you have fluoride in your drinking water, you've got to get it out, because if you don't know what it's all about, you need to get our 4 tapes out on water fluoridation. In fact, if you buy a Big Berkey from us or a Berkey Light, you get a 4-tape set or a video we produced. I suggest you get the 4-tape set on water fluoridation. Call 1-800-544-8927 and ask about either Big Berkey. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I want to tell you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there across America listening to us, I hope many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. You've got the four best tapes of the month, the monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us get the truth out across America, because we have to pay for our radio and television time, and believe me, it's expensive. Well, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of either our February or our March newsletter, our February newsletter deals with why we went to war in Iraq. Our March newsletter goes into why we went to war in Iraq. Our February newsletter deals with what happened on the morning of September 11th. I will be glad to send you a free copy of either newsletter. Now, we talked today about Skull and Bones. We have the best material on Skull and Bones. First of all, we have a four-tape set on Skull and Bones that gives you tremendous insight into what this organization is really all about. My interviews with Alexandra Robbins, my interviews with a woman, Charlotte Isabey, whose father was a member of Skull and Bones, Chris Mulligan. So that's the four-tape set, Skull and Bones. And then, of course, we have a book, The Fleshing Out of Skull and Bones by Chris Mulligan, which is essays by people who study this. We have Professor Sutton's excellent book, The American Establishment. We even have a syllabus we put together with the names of everybody who's ever been a member of Skull and Bones and everything about them. And we've simply taken this from the material put out by Skull and Bones. For instance, as you know, there have been six Bushes who are members of Skull and Bones. This is a intergenerational secret society. And so you can get any of these items, the four-tape set, Skull and Bones, the book, The Fleshing Out of Skull and Bones, The American Establishment, or you can get the syllabus, which has all of the names. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You need to understand what the Skull and Bones is all about, because I can promise you that short of divine intervention, our next president is going to belong to Skull and Bones. You have a choice of two people who have a background in a secret occult organization where their meeting rooms are adorned with swastika and skulls, and you wonder why any logical person would have anything to do with an organization like that. Why? Well, because that's where the power is. That's where the money is. That's how you get into banking and the CIA. That's how you become president of the United States. Well, then, of course, we have so many other items that you need to get. Our video on Diapraxis in the church growth movement aimed at destroying the Protestant church. And, of course, it gets into the background of changing the message and the music of the Protestant church. And, of course, if you get the video Diapraxis, you'll begin to understand how this ties back to Madame Blavatsky and Alice Bailey and into the occult. Our video Megiddo, the March to Armageddon. Must-seeing for anybody who wants to understand what's going on. The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, my interview with Professor Sutton before he passed away. And there's a book that goes with that you can get separately, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. My book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and you can get that by itself, or you can get it with a video with a four-tape set, The Brotherhood of Darkness Special. The syllabus on Iraq, the Untold Story. You can get that by itself, or you can get a video that goes with this. It gets into the background of all the wars of the last century. They were all contrived. They were all fought for far different reasons than the boys who went overseas to fight and bleed and suffer and die were ever allowed to know. The video sustainable development, and you can get a syllabus with that or a video. You need to understand what this is all about and how they're going to use our local government to set up local communes to control your property and your future and your family and your freedom. And then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Till tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.